Folks, I am really excited to talk about our newest sponsor for the coaching staff, Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust, also All-American Used Cars and Trucks. Two really, really good businesses. I'm going to start with Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust. You know, it's hard to find a good mechanic. It's hard to find somebody that you trust. And, you know, long before this situation came about, we had been taking our cars to Ruiz for a year, year and a half, and they've done great, great work. They're honest. They're upfront. They can do everything. They, you know, take care of your motor, take care of your brakes, tires, oil, so simple stuff like oil changes, brake pads, mufflers, whatever you may need. Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust are going to take care of it for you. If you are in the Omaha area and you are looking for a quality, reasonably priced, customer-friendly situation, you're not going to regret giving Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust a chance here. They are located at 4839 North 90th Street, Omaha, Nebraska, 68134. You can give Esmeralda a call up there. Her number is 402-317-2572. And they'll get you taken care of. I'm saying this as a customer. We literally do not bring our cars anywhere other than Ruiz Auto Service and Exhaust for anything that we do from this point for the last year or two. So again, another business here, All American Used Cars or Trucks. If you're in the market for a used car or truck, go check out Juan Carlos's business there. 144th and I-80, 14706 Schooner Road here in Omaha. Go check it out here. If you're looking to exchange a car, buy, sell, trade, whatever it may be, you're going to get an honest deal from honest people. So go check out Ruiz Auto Service and Exhaust and All American Used Cars and Trucks. Good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of a Pen and a Napkin podcast, a weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Welcome back to the coaching staff, sponsored by All American Used Cars and Trucks and Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust. My co-host, Mr. Tony D. Viss, is on the other end of the line. Mr. Viss, how are you doing this fine Wednesday afternoon?
Doing any better would be illegal. Just 70s, upper 70 temperature-wise, and, you know, kind of back in the routine with school and all that good stuff. I heard it's supposed to heat back up this weekend, but doggone, we got college football on Saturday. I don't know if it gets much better. How about you and the big Omaha?
Pretty much the same here. I don't want to talk about any illegal activities or anything like that, you know, but... you know, we're good. School is back into the swing of things, and educating America's youth. We talked a little history of the Hebrews and world history today, and we talked about the Electoral College and government class. And what did we talk? Oh, in history, American history, we did a fast forward version on the American Civil War, but we're really going to dive into Reconstruction tomorrow. So we have lost half our subscribers here in the last 30 seconds. I apologize for that. So, but that's what's going on here. Episode number 97. Tony, I have, I only have two number 97s here for you. And no, here's a fun fact for you. No Football Hall of Famers wear the uniform number 97.
Wow.
Yeah.
What, do we got some hockey?
They're two football players. They're from our lifetime, two defensive ends.
97, two defensive ends. And they're from the 1800s. let's
back,
see.
Back with the Gettysburg Address that my students got to hear today, so.
That's good. That's a good connection. Yeah. Oh, man, 97. Ed Too Tall Jones, I think, was 79, and I'm dyslexic, yeah, so that yeah. one's not going to work. Yeah. 97. Man, I am stumped on this one.
One played for the University of Alabama, and I think he was most known for his time with the Buffalo Bills.
Cornelius Bennett?
There's one. The other one, I believe, played at the University of Illinois and was most known for his time with the Tampa Bay Bucks.
Simeon Rice?
There it is, my friend. Well done. Well done. You just need a little love. So,
here's, will help.
Yeah. Here's a fun fact for you. There's a guy, Joe Bimeal, something like that. Apparently, he just retired a few years ago. He's the only major league player ever to wear the uniform number 97. You can sleep easy tonight, my friend.
I can.
Yeah, so.
I can. Hopefully, I'll get a good 8 hours consecutive with that one.
If that don't put you to sleep, come to my world history class tomorrow.
Hey, I'll be in the same boat soon.
You take melatonin? No, I just go to Mr. Viss's world history class.
It puts me out like a baby.
It's like a horse tranquilizer. Okay, they're with the other half of the subscribers. All right, so, episode number 97. And in all seriousness, I love this topic. I think I've got, of all the episodes that we've done, Tony, I think I've got the longest list of bullet points that I'm really excited to share for today. Building your program's culture in the preseason, and what you, and I think a lot of the things that Tony and I are going to focus on here probably the next month or two is just getting coaches ready for the upcoming season here. And again, if you're a football coach listening to this, you know, try to apply it if you'd like. It's soccer, whatever it may be. You know, really excited to talk about this. It was something, as I became more seasoned and experienced, I recognized the value of. And there were certain things that I did earlier in my career that I definitely didn't do later on in my career. And I'm just really excited to get going with this. How about you, buddy?
Yeah, this will be a fun one, you know, just trying to get that foundational piece put in, building up some of that sweat equity, if you will, before you get into the season and things get a little bit more serious and different things that go with it. But yeah, I think this is a very important topic.
So I've got, like I said, I probably got 10, 12 different things written down here. And a couple of things, I was working on some basketball stuff here today. And I actually, after I got my initial list, I'm like, oh man, that's another good one there. I you know, would see something and add it onto it. So, so in no real particular order, I think one of the things that I really wanted to emphasize was, having a team theme in your preseason culture and kind of establishing, obviously a lot of different things going into your season. We did that a lot with books and readings. And we, in especially the last 4 years, and I know I've talked about this before, so excuse me if you've heard it before, but we did a John Gordon book every year. We took about 2 weeks to go through it, you know, piece by piece by piece, came up with some worksheets, some discussion points. We would have group discussions on things. The four John Gordon books that we did, Energy Bus, Soup, The Carpenter, and Stick Together. And it was a great starting point for our kids to really, you know, just it was just a good starting point for the entire program to move forward. And here's going to be some really, really big things. You know, we did my first year the Energy Bus first, and again, it had nothing to do with, oh, the, you know, because what's, you know, one of the most famous things to come out of the Energy Bus is energy vampires, of course. I was not coming, I had no idea really much about the kids on a really personal level. That it was off of COVID. It was off the COVID summer of 2020. So we barely got to spend any time of each other. So it was not a general statement. It was just establishing, hey, biggest thing we got to have is we got to be excited about what we're doing. And if you can't be excited, if you can't get on the bus with us, then this is not the place that I want you to be for the long term, because we're just not going to allow that. We don't want that around. And so, you know, that was the first thing I wrote down, Tony. I'll kick it to you.
Yeah, I think those are important things. And you can take those themes if you want. And, you know, getting ready to do like your poster shoot. And, you know, a lot of times programs handle those before the season starts so they can distribute those early on and get those local businesses that sponsor them and stuff like that. But you can take that theme in a variety of ways, whether, like you said, if it's from your book, you can put it onto your poster. If you want, you could even make a t-shirt with it. But I think those are important things to do. And the themes, you know, kind of find that thing that bonds them together. Yeah. I think that's an important thing to do with that. And then, like you said, the John Gordon, it just goes really, really well with it. Training camp's another good one there.
Yep.
But he's done a nice little free resource thing now where when you do his book studies, he provides those questions for you. And so that's a really good resource to plug in. I think I saw one for the Energy Bus come across X last night, if I remember correctly, or recently anyway. Just another free resource that he provides there. Another one, just to kind of put in a plug on it, Lead for God's Sake by Todd Gonger is another really, really good book. I cannot recommend that one highly enough. I love the John Gordon ones, but Lead for God's Sake was probably my most favorite one that we've ever done as far as a book study with that one. So those are kind of my two cents on that. Some other things that you take a look at as far as the preseason stuff goes, you know, one of the things that can be very, very important, this can be a time to kind of empower your leaders. And what I mean by that is you probably have distinguished your leaders over the summer as you've put in, you know, 8 weeks, 10 weeks, whatever it may have been with summer basketball. Your leaders are probably starting to develop. And this is a time where you can do a couple different things with them. Number one, kind of develop a leadership council, empower them, you know, help them, train them. You know, I think leaders are somewhat born, but I think they're more developed than they are born, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I would agree.
And then the other thing you can do with your leaders as well is, like with your open gyms, have your leaders be the ones that announce that, you know, kind of, I don't know, publicize is the right word that I'm looking for, but get the word out about open gyms and stuff like that. And then also let them kind of pick how the open gyms are going to be run. Are they going to be the ones that lead fundamentals? Are they going to be the ones that pick the teams? Are they going to be the ones who decide what type of games that you're going to do? Because there's a million different ways to do open gyms and get something constructive out of it. And so I think that's a thing that you can do with just empowering them, whether it is coming alongside them in like a leadership council and kind of counsel, advise them on how to lead, the best techniques and stuff like that. And then on top of that, give them some weight, if you will, with picking out open gym dates and how it's going to be run and the type of open gym games and scrimmages that you're going to do. So I think those are important there as well.
We used to do a unity council, and we would have one representative from each class, and then our team captains or program captains, but we wouldn't start that until the season started. But I like that idea of doing something like that, even in the preseason type of stuff and preparing for the season. So team service project, I think, is a good culture builder in the preseason. And again, in a lot of high school situations, that might be a little bit hard to do in the preseason, but definitely in your early season practices. You know, practice on a Saturday morning, get done at 10 or 11, and then, hey, we're going to load up and we're going to go do blank here for an hour or two. Last year, it was a really fun day. We went to the senior center in town here, and we spent time. We spent about an hour and a half to 2 hours just playing card games and board games with some of the residents at the facility. And it was a lot of fun. Our kids had a really, really good time. So a team service project is another really, really good way to build your culture, to show your kids what being part of a team is truly about. And yeah, the wins and losses are important, and scoring baskets and you know, all of that, all of those things are important. But what's the most important thing is using your place to make the world a better place. And if you can do that, that's a really, really good thing. So that was another thing I had on my list, Tony.
Yeah, I think, you know, your platform as a coach, as a leader, as an athlete, if you can take that and help to guide them and help them to be better people, I think that's such an important thing that sometimes coaches forget about. You know, I remember the late Ed Thomas, the famous football coach from Appleton Parkersburg, had the quote, "If all I have ever taught you is to block and tackle, I have failed you." And just knowing that his calling was higher. And so I think that's an important thing there as well. Another thing that you can do, and you know, depending upon I think most of us are in that situation where you have multiple sport athletes. But if you have those kids who are, you know, maybe a spring sport or a summer sport, or maybe just a one sport, this can be a time where, you know, you can get in some conditioning and weightlifting time.
Yep.
And kind of build that sweat equity with each other. And then you can kind of get your, we have a strength and conditioning coach, but you can get some ideas and stuff from them in your workouts and things. And I think the weight room is one of those places that builds a lot of bonds with athletes. And I think it can be underutilized sometimes by coaches, but yet it can be so very, very powerful. So I would, some of that preseason conditioning and strength training, I think is a really good time for this time of the year to plug into.
Yeah, I had that. That was my next thing on my list, Tony. And that weight room, those conditioning, those sprints on the football field or the soccer field, or, you know, distance running, whatever, maybe that shared suffering builds a bond with your group without a doubt. So I really like that one. So fundamental workouts was another one on my list here. Just getting your guys in the gym and get your gals in the gym and working on their games. It doesn't have to be marathon 2-hour sessions. A really efficient half hour to 45 minutes of just footwork, ball handling, shooting, getting touches, whatever it may be, but getting those fundamental workouts in 2 or 3 times a week for your kids is a really, really important thing. If you're a head coach, I really encourage you to delegate that type of stuff, if at all possible. Again, not all staffs are created equally, either with the skill of the staff or the numbers that you have on staff. But, you know, get your kids in there, get them working on their games, get them doing the stuff that they need to do to get you prepared for the season so you could be as successful as you can. You gotta get those shots up, you gotta get those touches up so that on that first day of practice you can hit the ground running as soon as you possibly can.
Yeah, I mean, you know, each state association has its different rules and stuff. You know, we as coaches can be in the gym with them, but we cannot lead anything. And so I agree, you know, you need to designate that, especially if it goes against the rules. But there are some different trainers, some different people in the area that you can plug in and help lead that. But fundamentals are so very, very key. You know, you want to teach them, you know, how to play the game properly. And I think this is a great time to focus in on fundamentals that sometimes may be neglected by certain coaches and stuff. Another one that I've done in different places, you know, we mentioned that you run across multiple sport athletes, but we did like a breakfast club, you know, in different places where I was at. I would just open the gym in the morning before school, because not many programs, I mean, in the fall, you know, volleyball or whoever has kind of that monopoly on the gym. But if you can get in there before school, open it up and just let them shoot for 30 minutes to 60 minutes. And I think a breakfast club shooting thing, again, that shared sacrifice of getting up early, you know, losing a few minutes of sleep or an hour of sleep or whatever. But at the same time, how do players oftentimes gauge their effectiveness? And if they're playing well, is how they shoot the ball. And, you know, I think one of the things as coaches that we probably need to err on is shooting it too much, you know. Yeah. getting a lot of shots up, because it's like anything, the way that you become better at it is to put in the time.
Mm-hmm. In 1993, Counting Crows referred to Omaha as somewhere in Middle America. More people know Omaha as the home of Warren Buffett, the Union Pacific Railroad, and the College World Series. Athletically, Nebraska is known for its dominance in college and high school football and volleyball, while basketball has perennially been on the back burner. But for one season, in its largest city, basketball was king of the state. In a time of social and political turmoil in our country, 3 high school boys basketball teams from Omaha, Nebraska were ranked in the top 25 in the country, featuring some of the best talent that one city has ever produced anywhere in the country. Amongst these 3 teams were 9 Division I basketball players, and all 15 starters from these 3 teams played collegiate athletics at various levels for at least 2 seasons. Kings of their court, 3 teams, 1 city, and the greatest basketball season in Nebraska high school history begins with the chaotic ending of the 2020 state tournament as the whole world was shutting down due to the COVID-19 virus. Over the span of the next year, these players, coaches, and parents navigated their basketball futures while also, like the rest of the United States and the world, worked through COVID quarantines, the George Floyd murders and riots, the political turmoil of the 2020 presidential campaign, and much more. 1 year later, the destinies of these three teams would intertwine themselves for the final time at the 2021 Nebraska State Basketball Tournament, where the crescendo to this story occurred 365 days after it began, with some of the best high school basketball any state has ever seen. Kings of their court, three teams, one city, and the greatest basketball season in Nebraska high school history is the story of highly driven individuals searching to achieve lifelong dreams and aspirations, both on and off the basketball floor, during a season that almost didn't happen. Kings of Their Court will be published on October the 1st, Tuesday, October the 1st. Kindle copies are $9.99. Paperback copies are $19.99. Copies are eligible to be pre-ordered today, so be sure to get on Amazon.com and pre-order your copy of Kings of Their Court. No, I agree with you there, Tony. You can never shoot it too much. Getting those shots up. The Breakfast Club, I love that idea. We've done that. I've done that for years and years and years. It was really simple. Come in and literally shoot in your street clothes and just get 20, make 20 set shots and 20 free throws. And you got 20 minutes to make 40 shots is the way we would do it. We're not cutting. We're not passing. We're not doing any of that type of stuff. And, you know, for the most part, it worked out really, really well. So I like that. So along with that, I think it's important that you start building that competitive edge. Keep score when you're running, making runs in the open gyms. Win or stay. You got to win to keep the court. Little things like that. If you're doing other activities other than basketball stuff, keep it competitive. Like you were talking, as an example, even in stuff that we've talked about already, you were talking about lifting and running and conditioning and weight room. You know, I know one thing that's really popular with a lot of programs is making weightlifting or weight room teams. And, you know, either the coaches pick the teams or the players draft their own teammates, and it's competitive within those teams. So, you know, that's another thing that you can do. But I think it's important to slowly but surely build that, what Anson Dorrance calls that competitive cauldron, to build up the competitiveness of everything that you're doing, so that, you know, your kids are ready to compete from day one on practice. Now, again, you don't want to start, you know, having kids lose it in the middle of October in an open gym. A slow and steady build, just like you build November, December, and January to play your best in February and hopefully March. Well, same type of thing here. You're using August, September, and October to get your team in the best place that you can be physically and mentally going into that first practice. And I think competitiveness is part of it.
Yeah, you know, it's one of the things that I think that multiple sport athletes have an advantage on specialist in, yep, is that multiple sport athletes learn to compete, you know, year round, if you will, or three fourths of the year or half the year, whatever the case may be. And they learn how to compete and not give up, while specialists, I don't know if they necessarily have that to the degree that multiple sport athletes do. And again, I'm sure there are some exceptions both ways on that one. Another one that helps to build in that competition thing, you know, here at towards the middle to the end of September, we'll start playing in our league. They play just down the road in North Liberty, and they'll also run to Central Iowa a couple times to play in a league in the Des Moines area in Ankeny. But there are some fall leagues that are out there, and sometimes it's a team thing like what we do, but I also know that sometimes they end up taking in like 64 players or whatever, and they divide up and they play it that way. They do like a draft and different things like that. So there's both the team aspect of it. If you don't have enough, you know, your school, small school, and they're playing football or running cross country or whatever it might be, maybe you just join one where it's like an individual type thing and you have a draft and different things. And maybe it's both. Maybe you play one with your team, and maybe you play one on your own on a different day there. But yeah, there are leagues out there that those who want to keep playing and want to keep, you know, keep in shape and stuff and keep sharp, that might get plugged into.
Mm-hmm. I also had kind of within that, like that conditioning and weight room stuff, surprise your kids with 1 or 2 days of just some really non-competitive, and I feel like I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth, but you know, it's political. It's a Democratic National Convention this week, so it's a political time of year. I could do that, but you know, have 1 or 2 fun days mixed in there. You know, wiffle ball or a scavenger hunt or you know, just whatever it may be. You know, reward your kids for their hard work. Let them know that you appreciate that, both verbally but also in more obvious messages. And some kids need to see and hear those type of things. But again, kind of, you know, like if you play a game of wiffle ball for 45 minutes, it's still being competitive, and you're kind of finding out who your competitors are. But you're having a good time, and it's less stressful. It's no stress at all, and you're enjoying the company of being around one another. So that was another idea I had, Tony.
I like that. You know, it's kind of like going back to some of the conditioning stuff. You know, it doesn't always have to be, you know, sprints or whatever. Sometimes you can just make it fun and play tag. And I know that may seem, oh, come on, Tony, that's elementary-ish or whatever. But you would be surprised at how sometimes the competitiveness kicks in, you know, their sardine tag. But there's a variety of form of tag that you can do to replace some of that conditioning that they might not even know that they are conditioning and just having fun. Mm-hmm. Another thing that you can do as well during this time is you can reach out to, like, your local area, like businesses and stuff like that, because there's going to probably be times during fundraising and a variety of things that you're going to reach out to them to ask them to support you. Mm-hmm. And I don't know about you, Marty, but when somebody that I don't know asks me for money, my chances of giving them money are pretty slim. Yeah. But if I have a relationship with them, like I know them or know of them or whatever the case may be, that's going to you know, increase my chances of contributing to that. And I think it's one of those things with area businesses where, you know, your family, your coaching staff, your whatever, you can get in and visit some of those area businesses and start to develop a relationship with them and come up with some ideas. And then when you come back later on, hey, we'd love to have you sponsor our poster, or hey, we'd love you to have you to be on our card here, that you get a discount by coming in and we get a portion of that or whatever. But it just helps to build some of those relationships. And I think this is a good time to do that, because in the middle of the season, those things can kind of fall through the cracks.
Yeah. Those personal relationships, you know, I before I decided to step away, I felt like I was really starting to develop some of those really solid personal relationships with some of the, I don't know if it's the important people in town or whatever it may be, but you know, I think that's a really good thing as well. I think the preseason is a great time to really establish clear expectations and standards. And maybe this is just on my mind because of, you know, I'm going through my first week of school here, and I've spent a lot of time talking with my students about expectations and standards. Not a lot of rules, mind you. There's not a lot of rules, but expectations and standards. And I think that it's really important early on to establish that every year with your programs. Let's say you've got all 12 of your varsity kids back. You still need to take the time to redefine your expectations and standards and make sure that they are crystal clear, because you may have the same 12 players with the same 12 names, but they are not the same 12 people as they were when you guys left off last season. A lot of things have changed with most, if not all, of those players. And so I think this is a very, very, very important time to really emphasize those expectations and standards, and the X amount of time that you take to do that in September and October going into November will save you who knows how much time in December, January, February. I just really, really believe in that. And I know probably in my classes the last few days, kids have gotten tired of me standing up there and saying, this is exactly how this is going to go, and this is, you know, and this is my expectation here. But you know what? I would rather take an extra 15, 20 minutes, half hour to go through all of that the first couple of days of school than having to deal with garbage for the next 175 days of school. And I think you need to think of it the same way with your program. At least that's the way I feel about it, Tony. I don't know about you.
I think the same thing. I think a lot of times during this time, you know, we do the two truths, one lie, the get to know you type things. And again, not that those are bad things, but if everybody's doing them, it just kind of gets redundant.
Yep.
And I think sometimes kids just want to know, like, hey, what are the expectations in here? What are the procedures in here? You know, what are the norms, if you will? And so I think that's important to do as well. And I think also during this time, it's a chance to get to know your players a little bit better and to have maybe a little bit deeper conversation as far as, like, you know, what are your expectations? What are things that you know you guys want to be held accountable for? What are the expectations in terms of what it means to be a Cougar or to be a Pioneer or whatever those types of things may be? What are some drills you guys like? What are some things that we do that maybe I need to reevaluate? But I think you can kind of strip things down a little bit and have some of those conversations with them. And what it does is it empowers them to where it feels like it's a player. I don't know if owns team or run team, what word I'm looking for there, but they got some skin in the game and maybe get a little bit more buy-in by doing that rather than being dictatorial. Like, hey, this is what I think. No, you know, you might want to get some more voices in there.
Yep.
I think that's important too, to listen to them so that you can get the buy-in from them, because player-led teams are going to beat coach-led teams the majority of the time.
I really like that idea about having those conversations, Tony. That's a really, really good point. And everything that you said on that was terrific. And that's probably, you know, at times that's probably something I could have done a little bit better. You know, but it is what it is, you know, but I really like what you had to say on that. That was that conversation piece with it, and what do you, you know, and I do know I would say often, you know, what do you need from me? Am I, you know, are we okay? Are we clear on the direction we're going? You know, things like that. And those were conversations that were definitely had in that regard. But I like that thought of just having that conversation along with, while you are setting your clear expectations and standards. And I think, you know, Bobby Knight basically said, if it doesn't involve winning, I let the players make all the decisions, you know? And so when you're setting those expectations and standards, figure out what's really, really important to you and then turn the rest over to the kids and let them do what's comfortable with them or for them. You know, and that's kind of the way I would do things as well. So, I got about three more things, buddy.
I am getting down. I think I got just one.
Okay. Oh, go ahead. Or you want me to go with my next one?
Yeah, I'll let you go with yours, and I'll go up.
Not only are you trying to build a culture, and this is more geared towards high school situations, not only are you trying to build a culture with your players, but I also think that you're trying to build a culture with your parents. And one of the things that we did quite often, especially when I was at SCUT, is we would have a preseason parents social. We would have a get-together. We would organize something. And it was just a night of people just hanging out and getting to know other parents within the program. And, yeah, you know, every once in a while when you're there as the head coach, maybe you get cornered in a little bit of an uncomfortable conversation, or maybe something you're not really terribly comfortable talking about. But most people have enough social sense to know when that is and when that is not appropriate. But it also gets the parents to see you with kind of your hair down a little bit, so to speak. And, you know, everybody is just kind of relaxing and having a good time. And so I think that... And part of that was driven by COVID, where we didn't do that so much at Fort Calhoun. But in retrospect, that might have been a really, really good thing to do. Not to say, you know, everything was really good in that regard, but it was just always a nice way to really connect with your parents and build that culture and, you know, kind of shorten those bridges between the coach parent relationship. Now, are you still going to get the email about Johnny's playing time or where Mary was sitting at on the bus or whatever? Yeah, those are still going to come, but maybe you can shave a few of those unwanted communications or de-escalate those situations a little bit more when your parents get to know you a little bit more as just Tony or Marty and in that social environment.
Yeah, I think that's a good one. We have what's called a parent support group. And so you can have some of those meetings going into the season where you cover things like, you know, if you're going to get a sandwich or a pizza or whatever after the game and who's going to order that as a parent and where is it going to be, you know, delivered at and taken to the bus and how many and all those types of things. And so I think you can do some of that. But I also go back to what you were adding there too, Marty. Sometimes it's good, you know, to put in there just some time just to kind of, that isn't scripted, that isn't addressing those things, and just get to know them a little bit. Cause like you said, there can be some time where they get to know you a little bit and realize, you know, that you do have the best intentions and we don't look at each other, you know, with bated breath, so to speak, as far as thinking the worst of them and different things like that. You can put a name to the face and do that. And I think the other thing that also helps with too is you can connect parents to other parents too. So when they go to the games and stuff, you know, they have that connection of somebody to sit by, and you start to build some of that family type setting that hopefully, you know, programs have.
Yep. What's your last one you got, buddy?
Yeah, I was going to say my last one here real quick is just simply, the team poster. I think that's something that you can put into place. And we kind of alluded to that earlier, but this is a time where you can contact a photographer and figure out when you're going to take the picture, you know, as far as it's going to go on the poster and when it's going to go off the print and how much money, and get your sponsors lined up, and, you know, and then how are you going to put it? Are you just going to have, you know, the varsity kids that are in the poster, and then when you do the team pictures during the season, you're going to plug in the JV and the freshman or whatever in that look, or are you going to do a poster that's, you know, 9 through 12 wide, you know, so you've got some of those things you can put into place. And then once you get the poster, you know, whether that's the beginning of the season or whenever that may be, you know, setting up, going out to deliver it into the community, and then thanking those area businesses and signing it for them and to let them know how much you appreciate. And so I think that's something that you can get knocked off your plate or early on in the season so that, you know, you can let them know the gratitude that you have. And I think it's important to get those posters out there so that people that visit these area businesses, oh, they've got a, you know, a boys basketball or a girls basketball or team and that, okay, and they, this restaurant's behind it, maybe we should go check them out type thing. And so I think it's good to have that schedule out there so people can take a look at that and find a game or two or three that they can take in with their family.
My last major thing here, and then one to kind of sum it all up, it's an opportunity to really kind of talk to your kids about what your vision is for the team, X's and O's wise, you know, very subtly. Obviously, like you said, you're not coaching them, but hey, you're talking to your kids before they start an open gym. Hey, let's really put, if you're really thinking, hey, let's really push the ball, you know, this year. And during our open gyms, we just really look to push it in transition, guys or gals, or, hey, you know, we really want to attack the paint here. Shots, if you make a shot in the paint, and let's say you've got a big post player, let's say, and you really, you know, without saying it, you want the ball to go to your 6'9" center, if you're a guy's coach or something like that. You know, points in the paint are worth 3 instead of 2. Or something like that, you know, just different things that you can kind of subtly, push on your team to, you know, just to kind of let them know, hey, here's kind of what I'm thinking as we go into, you know, November 15th when we start practice. Here's what I think we might be emphasizing. You're saying it without saying it, if that makes any sense, Tony.
Yeah, you can definitely get that figured out. And I think that's one of the things that's different from high school sports to college sports is the fact that at high school, you have to fit your system around what your players can do. While with college, you can recruit the type of athlete that you want to play a certain way.
Yeah. Yep. The last thing, Tony, and I actually found this. I was going, like I said, I was going through some basketball stuff. And are you familiar with the guy Jamie Beckler or Bechler?
Yeah, I've heard, seen some of Jamie's stuff on X. Yeah.
Okay, so I was reading an article that he did for the Daily Coach. With if you're not subscribing to the Daily Coach, it is absolutely awesome. It's a great daily email that you're going to get in your mailbox every morning. It's really, really good stuff. They were talking to him, and he says, you know, he has people come up to him all the time. Hey, what's a great team building activity? And in the article, he said, you know, and that's a great question. And you know, hey, let's play, you know, whatever, like you were kind of referring to earlier. But it, and this perfectly ties into what we had already planned about talking about here today. He said the best team culture builder that he can give to coaches or players is to just be present daily. Just be present daily with your team and step by step by step by step, build those positive relationships and build that positive culture to take your team into the upcoming season. And, you know, it kind of made me think a little bit of, you know, growing up in Sheldon, Iowa, you know, my three best buddies, you know, Moose Meyer and Kevin, along with some other people, Nate the Great, Dick Jungers and Newell Fonda, his twin brother Dave. And do I remember everything that we did on a daily basis? No, I remember things here and there and big things that happened throughout the years that we grew up together. But I know that we spent every day together. And that's what builds that bond, and that's what keeps us close, you know, over 30 years after we graduated. And I think that is, you know, sometimes the brilliance is in the simplicity. And as a head coach, if you're emphasizing to your team to just be present daily, that's going to go a long, long ways for the growth of your culture, of your team, especially here in the preseason.
I think if you talk to Fortune 500 CEOs, one of the guys that they really admire in the NBA that is a master at team building is Greg Popovich. Mm-hmm. And if you take a look at some of the things that Pop does, one of the big ones is just allowing organic conversation to happen amongst players. Like he does the setup of who he puts with at different tables and different things like that. But he does not like dictate what they talk about. He does not do any of that. He just allows organic conversation. And that's what really bonds the Spurs together. You can do a million trust falls all you want, but allowing guys to break bread, to eat together, and just to have natural, organic conversation is one of the best team builders. And Popovich is a master at that thing. And I think that's why you've seen so many of Greg's coaching tree get snapped up by other NBA teams trying to get that Spurs culture, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Coaches, by now you have seen the newest thing coming out of a pen and a napkin, the opening tip, Substack newsletter. I put an edition out there for free, and hopefully you see what a great investment this is going to be for you as a coach. I'm guessing it probably is, if you watch everything and listen to everything, it's going to take you almost 3 hours to get through everything on the opening tip newsletter here. What do we have in there? You've got an original article by myself here, just thoughts, ideas on different coaching topics. Into the Lab, that's probably my favorite thing. Is the Into the Lab. It's me, another coach, and a whiteboard, and we're just drawing stuff up here. Stuff to help you out, to help you become better, and to help your team become better this coming season and beyond. Got another exclusive podcast. You heard the first one, Industriousness from the Wooden Pyramid of Success, and it's me and it's two semi-retired former girls basketball coaches, Matt Kern of York, Nebraska, Nate Wall of David City Aquinas here in Nebraska. Every newsletter, we're going to break down an aspect of Wooden's Pyramid of Success. Bookshelf recommendations from off the bookshelf, X's and O's stuff. I'm dropping in a university video. It's just going to be given to you there. You know, and I really believe in the products that I've put together. It's practical stuff that's going to help make you a better coach. And then we've got the Coach's Corner with links to clips and articles. As you saw, we had our two Olympic coaches, Steve Kerr and Cheryl Reeve, Just really, really good stuff here. And I know it's subscription-based, but goodness gracious sakes alive, as Coach Wooden would say, it is so affordable. $8 a month for two newsletters. That's $4 every newsletter. That's $2 every single week. Or you can get a year-long subscription, $75. That's 24 editions of the newsletter. That's basically $3 a newsletter. That's basically a dollar an hour if it takes you about 3 hours to get through everything that you're getting here. It could not be more affordable. It could not be more positive for you. It's going to help make you a better coach. So subscribe to the Opening Tip newsletter. Folks, you're not going to regret it. Well, Tony, you know one of the greatest teams that the world has ever seen over the last 40 years.
Obviously, Europe.
Oh, yes, our favorite rock band from Sweden, the Europeans. It is time for the coaching staff trivia. Mr. Viss, it is your turn to lob something my direction. What do you have for me today?
All right. We're not that far away from the Olympics, and there was some very, very memorable moments in the Olympics. You know, Curry's 4 3-pointers in the last 2 minutes of the gold medal game and coming back from, I believe it was 17 down at one time to Serbia, 13 yep. going to the fourth quarter. But in the Olympic run for the men, Kevin Durant became the all-time United States leading scorer in the Olympics by passing what former basketball player?
I'm very confident I know the answer here, Tony. And I actually, I went to the final, the women's Final Four in 1988 in Kansas City, Missouri. And I went to a, you know, they have the socials at the mm-hmm. Final Four, and I saw this very tall, very athletic woman at a couple of these social occasions. Did not have any conversations with her, of course, but I believe it was Lisa Leslie.
You are correct.
Yes, and it counts. Yes. So, awesome. Yeah, Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant breaking Lisa Leslie's record. Very, very impressive. Great run. Speaking of the Olympics, this brings us to this.
For these, we have the meat.
One of the folks that had the best run at the Olympics is our Arby's winner this week. Tony, do you know who that is?
Our Arby winner from the Olympics just signed a big extension would be
nope, didn't sign an extension but got a contract.
Whoa. No extension. Got a contract.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Would you like for me to tell you?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Gershon Yabusele from the French squad.
On the Sixers.
Yeah, signed with the Sixers 1 year, a little over $2 million. Had a great Olympics with the French, had been with the Celtics few years ago, and he's going to get another crack at the NBA based largely upon his Olympic performance. So good for Gershon, I guess, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he had a really nice run. I want to say 20-ish points against the Americans in the gold medal game, or maybe it was like 16, 18. But
I think he had over 20. Okay. Yeah, definitely played his way into that contract, so much so that you might say,
how about that?
And that is good stuff right there. We are in our TWIB segment now. We jump immediately there. Tony, I sent you four things. Which one do you want to talk about first? Or do you have anything else that you want to talk about that wasn't on that list?
No, I like the list. I'm just trying to think of which one, because there were all four were good topics. I'll let you pick. Let's give you the choice on this one. Where are we going first?
All the pressure. All right. So, Connecticut Sun sell out the TD Ameritrade Arena where the Boston Celtics play. TD Ameritrade Garden, excuse me. Over 19,000 fans in TD Ameritrade to see the Sun play. I think it was Phoenix. Am I right with that, Tony?
That is a good question. Let me see if I can find that real quick.
I'm looking very quickly as well here. I know exactly where
they played. LA.
Was it LA? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So to get 20,000 or 19,000 to see him play LA was an achievement as well. But I guess Boston, LA, Lakers, Celtics, maybe a little bit more natural than what we think there. So, just a really huge step forward, another step forward, a massive crowd without the usual suspects, i.e. the Liberty or the Sparks or, of course, Caitlin Clark.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, you could throw in the Aces in there too.
Yeah, I forgot the Aces. Did I not say the Aces? Yeah, okay. But, yeah, it was a good game. However, it was not one of the players from the Sun, and I apologize if I mispronounced her name, Dejani Carrington. Pretty vocal in her criticism of the WNBA, saying, you know, we could have done a lot more. Warranted, not warranted? What do you think, buddy?
I think it's warranted, to be honest with you. I think there are times that, you know, that the WNBA executives, if you will, do a fantastic job. You know, I think they do, for the most part, 75-90% of the time, do really, really well. But I feel like they dropped the ball on this one, because this should be one that was publicized a lot more than what it was. Because I think a lot of times what's going on is some of that Caitlin Clark resentment is all, Caitlin Clark's not involved, we can't get big numbers. And here is Connecticut, who is one of the top three teams in the league, no doubt about that. Yep. And they sell out in Boston. And you didn't really hear boo about it. And so I think the criticism is very much deserved.
Yeah. And Connecticut has been a very, very good franchise, was definitely the third best team last year, without a doubt. They played the Liberty in the semifinal and gave them all that they could handle in that series. They're having another good year this year. They're in second place. They got off to a great start, and they've kind of cooled off since then. I agree. They've gotten great. Obviously, Connecticut speaks for itself with the University of Connecticut, so it's a natural fit for the league. But they get great crowds at their home games, and yeah, you know, I really agree with you there, buddy. So, Gabby Williams,
yes.
You know, she is back in the league after taking the first half of the league off there, Tony.
Yeah, and she had kind of an interesting situation where she was traded from the Sparks to the Storm and then got hurt and then took the first, I'll say, two-thirds to half of the season off. And now is back with the Storm. She was a very sought after free agent. I think she had 21 points in the gold medal game against the United States. Yep. And, you know, what a big pickup for the Storm. Like, I think sometimes people just think, well, it's kind of a foregone conclusion that New York's going to win it because they just beat the Aces, who are on a roll. But I think the Storm, I think, is a threat. And then, you know, you turn around, and I also believe that Minnesota is a threat. So some of those teams out there maybe aren't getting enough coverage. And I think the Gabby Williams pickup by the Storm was a really big deal.
There are five teams in the W right now that are playing +600 basketball: New York, Connecticut, Minnesota, Las Vegas, and Seattle. And if you're, you know, and not just barely above 600, they're, you know, Seattle's at the bottom of that, and they're 643. They're winning almost two-thirds of their games. You know, these are good teams. These are really, really good teams. And I think the league is as balanced as it has been in quite a while. Oftentimes, and I understand, one of the criticisms of women's basketball can be at times that, well, like, for example, in the women's game, well, you know, it's going to be Tennessee or Connecticut or Baylor. One of those three teams are going to win it, as opposed to, you know, in the men's game, a little bit more drama, stereotypically. Mm-hmm. But I think in the last 5 to 10 years in the NCAA tournament, we've seen other schools rise up. Mississippi State, NC State made a Final Four run this year. I'm just kind of trying to think off the top of my head. Oregon State has been really good and almost made a Final Four. You know, on down the line, you know, and I'm just, again, USC has kind of come out of nowhere and has got a chance to win a championship. South Carolina is obviously not a traditional power in the blue blood, the long-term blue blood type of thing. And I think that with the Storm signing Gabby Williams, she averaged about 16, almost 16 a game in the Olympics with France. That's going to be a quality pickup for the Storm, who already have a really, really good team. And you know, kind of talking about the Liberty a little bit, and we'll talk about them here just a little bit more in more detail, but they're a little bit of a top-heavy team. Now, I think they're a little bit deeper than they have been the last year or two, but hey, if Stewie rolls her ankle for 2 weeks and you're only playing a best-of-five series, a lot can happen. A lot can happen. So there's a great article on ESPN.com today, Tony. I don't know if you saw it or not. They lay out the case for, I think, 7 or 8 teams to win the WNBA championship this year, and they were not flawed arguments. And I really think if everything were to happen in a certain way, now again, like right now would be Chicago and New York in the first round. Well, you know, Chicago would need Stewie to roll her ankle pretty good for them to have a chance to win the series. But hey, you never know. And I think this pickup by the Storm is just kind of. They're making a very, very quality move that is going to give them an opportunity to really, really battle with those other four top teams right now mathematically in the league. Coaches, if you are in the Omaha, Council Bluffs, Lincoln metropolitan areas and surrounding areas, it is that time of year again. It is time for the 2024 MBCA Fall Coaches Clinic Series. We're going to start this on Wednesday, September 18th. We're going to go 4 weeks in a row, September 18th, 25th, October the 2nd, and October the 9th. And we have got a great lineup of coaches. Drew Johnson, women's basketball coach at Nebraska Kearney. Marty Levinson, new men's basketball coach at Nebraska Kearney. Tim Sandquist, head men's basketball coach at Kirkwood Community College. Carrie Amy, the new women's basketball coach at the University of South Dakota. Mark Swoboda, from my alma mater, Briarcliff University, go Chargers, head men's basketball coach there. Coach Sabota is going to be down. Amy Williams, head women's basketball coach at the University of Nebraska, is going to be one of our guests. We've got a couple more slots to fill. So it is going to be a great series of clinics. It's going to be located at Legends Sports Bar here in Omaha, 72nd and Pacific Street, just east of 72nd Street there. And for those four clinics, $80 is going to cover your clinic fees, the beverages, the food, and the camaraderie, the networking, all of those different things you're going to have at the Metro Basketball Coaches Association Coaches Clinics here this fall series. It's going to be a great run of coaches, so I encourage you, get signed up today. If you want to get signed up, if you want more information, you can send an email to Tom Crable at mbcaomaha@gmail.com, and Tom will get back to you. He'll get you all the information that you need. So coaches, get signed up for this fall's run of coaches clinics for the Metro Basketball Coaches Association.
Yeah, and then the other thing I would give you too is, like, Chicago, I don't know if they're going to end up as the 8. Atlanta's on a roll. They've gotten a lot healthier than what they were. You could see Atlanta jump in, and they're going to be on a big time role if they actually do get in. And I can tell you right now, I don't know if you saw this one as well, but Sue Bird was talking about what team don't you want to see in the playoffs, and she plugged in the Indiana Fever because of how they're playing. They've got 13 wins on the year, which I don't know how many of the last seasons you could add together, and I don't know if they get to 13. It goes back. It's not a foregone conclusion like it used to be, you know, like you mentioned in UConn or Tennessee, and then South Carolina's kind of been the, you know, once Don Staley got there and got that thing rolling, they've been kind of the strongest one out there. But Iowa's made the last two national championship games. LSU with Kim Mulkey has become a player there as well. And so I think that's what's led to the popularity of the college women's game taking off, is some of that parity. And if you can get that to the WNBA, you know, obviously you were talking a little bit ago about the fact that Connecticut getting a sellout in Boston, that could be a situation where it could also help these other teams out, because if you can get that parity, it's going to keep the attention spans.
Yeah. Speaking of the Indiana Fever, and we haven't talked about them for a while. We haven't talked about their best player for a while, they're playing really well. You know, they're up to 13. Their overall record is 13-15, which, again, if you take a look at it from that scope, okay, well, they're not even 500. But they started out 1-8. They started out 1-8. They're 12-7 since that 1-8 start, and they swept the season series against Phoenix. They're doing some good things. Caitlin Clark set the rookie assist record the other night. They are really, really coming on. Kelsey Mitchell is filling it up for them. Beware. They are hard charging towards that sixth spot where Phoenix is at, and they've got a better than average chance of it catching Phoenix. Now, catching one of the top five teams, that might be a little bit too much of a long shot. May have dug themselves a little bit too big of a hole, but they are not the team that you would want to face in the first round of the WNBA playoffs right now, with the way that Clark is playing, Mitchell is playing, Leah Boston is really settling into her role, doing the things that she's really good at and playing off of those other two players. The depth is coming along. Katie Lou Samuelson, just a perfect stretch four for a team like that. You know, the pieces are starting to come together.
Yeah, and they beat Seattle the other day, which was a big win for them. And then, if I remember on the broadcast correctly, I believe somebody said they had the second easiest schedule left. Yeah. So I could see them definitely leapfrogging Phoenix. But like you mentioned, probably not going to crack the top five this year. But the future is definitely very, very bright. The one thing that I maybe wish they would have done is the WNBA trade deadline was yesterday, and there wasn't a lot of activity. I would have liked to have seen them make a few moves. That's one thing I think the WNBA, you know, when you take a look at the trade deadline in the NBA or even Major League Baseball, that's something that kind of pulls people in, and hopefully the WNBA begins to engage in that a little bit. I think the biggest trade was Marina Mabry. I believe she went from Chicago to Connecticut.
Yep.
That was probably the biggest trade that happened during the trading period.
And that was a good trade for Connecticut as well.
She's
a very good fit for them as well. So we saw them. Carter was home last week, and we watched them play Dallas. And, you know, Dallas is struggling. But Connecticut did to them what they should have done to them, and Marbury looked good. However you say it there. So last thing, Tony. You know, we've talked about all this other stuff, but the New York Liberty are kind of lapping the field right now. They are playing very, very good basketball. That same night that I was talking about that game with Dallas and Connecticut, we watched New York just destroy. I can't remember who they played that night, but I mean, they were up like 30 in the first half on somebody, and they just couldn't miss. And this is with Enescu and Stewart just coming back from France and the Olympics. You know, probably don't have their sea legs underneath them very well, and they just went out and just laid the hammer. Their point differential, they're beating their opponents by an average of 10 points a game, which, to put that in perspective, that's what the Celtics were doing to people during the regular season this year. So yes, in all things considered, if everybody stays healthy, I would put your next Cedar Rapids Public School paycheck down on the Liberty if you force me to at the sports book over somewhere in Council Bluffs. They're playing awful good basketball, Tony.
They're playing well. You know, one of the things I think that could be the Achilles heel that you brought up earlier, not the deepest team in the league. Maybe a little bit better than what they were a year ago, but those super teams like them and Las Vegas to a certain extent as well, they just don't have some of the depth that some of these others have. And, you know, I think as you go through there, would I put my money on them? Yeah. Would it surprise me if somebody like Minnesota or Seattle or perhaps even the Aces were to knock them off? Wouldn't really surprise me, but yeah. But I would say that they are the favorites.
And that's a great place for the league to be in. Like we talked about, Tony, it's good to have some parity. It's good to have some parity. And, you start wading into dangerous waters to a degree, like late 70s NBA, where, right now we're in a really good place with the men's league. I don't think that the interest is diminishing in any way, shape, or form because we've had six champions in the last 6 years. You know, sports are built on rivalries. You know that just as well as I do. And so would it be great to see the Aces and the Liberty meet up in the playoffs somehow, some way again, whether that's in the semifinals or the finals? Yeah, that would be great for the league. You'd get a lot of eyeballs on the television sets if that were to happen, just kind of like what we saw in the women's college game the last couple of years with LSU and Iowa as well. So it's going to be good. It's going to be a good run here here into the early fall season. So, Tony, episode number 97, preseason culture. Anything else to add on this, my friend?
The only thing I would say on that one, Marty, would be this. Don't just let the preseason go by thinking, it's not really my time to shine, so to speak. You're not in the season. There are a lot of dominoes you can put into place that when the season pops in, you can have a lot of legwork in that can make things go smoothly. Now can be an important time for you that can help set up success start November.
Yep. Wholeheartedly agree. Every time you're with your team, you're either going to make your team better or you're going to make them worse. And this is an opportunity, this preseason time period, to really lay a great foundation for the culture that you're going to have, because there's going to be nights where you're not going to defend well. There's going to be nights where you're not going to shoot it well, and you're going to have to fall back on that culture that you've built to hopefully be as successful as you can be in those situations where things are not working out the way that you intended. So episode number 97, hope folks enjoyed this. Everything that's going on here, we've got a lot of great things. Again, if you're in the Omaha area, and you need some work done on your car, Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust, all American used cars and trucks. If you're in the market for a new automobile or a new to you automobile, go check those places out. Hope you enjoyed the coaching staff here with my co-host, Mr. Tony Davis. Coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft one day at a time.